Welcome to the podcast that's all about affiliate management. A super affiliate manager and entrepreneur who has worked with leading brands, including Bet365, Leo Vegas, Rank, Jackpot Joy, William Hill, Ladbrokes, and more, helping to navigate the jungle that is affiliate management. Welcome to the Rue Right Podcast.
Welcome back to the podcast series devoted to affiliate management. In this series, I'll be interviewing affiliate managers, affiliates, and other industry players involved in the management of affiliates, giving listeners insights into best practices in affiliate management from all sides of the industry. Today, I'm talking with Laura O'Brien. Laura has a great deal of iGaming industry experience as an affiliate manager. Some might even call her a super affiliate manager. Having been head of affiliates at Mr. Greens, after being promoted from senior affiliate manager and working at companies such as Broadway Gaming and other leading poker networks and sportsbooks, you will not find anyone else more qualified than Laura. Thank you so much for joining me today, Laura, and welcome.
Thank you, Ren.
You're welcome. Laura, a few of our listeners today may not know who you are, and for their benefit, can you tell us a little bit about your path into the iGaming industry and how you became known as a super affiliate manager?
Well, Rue, I don't think anybody knows me as a super affiliate manager. I think you just made that up. If super means maybe a bit loud and old, okay. I wasn't a teenager who thought, you know what I want to do? I want to work in iGaming. It kind of just fell on me, I suppose. My part-time job while I was in school was doing telesales in this god-awful business park in Dublin. One day they decided to close down and I thought, oh crap, I'm going to have to get a new job. And, you know, really, really given this a lot of thought, I walked across the road to the building that was across the road, and that happened to be Sporting Bet. And wow. I got a job there in customer service. So I actually worked for long before the UIGEA. I worked for the American side that Sporting Bet owned at the time. I remember all the controversy around that. They sold it for a dollar or something. I worked there in a customer service that got me through much of school and then university. And then Sporting Bet, things obviously changed in regards to America. They sold off the American side. I was with the American side. And then they eventually were moving to Costa Rica. And I was in my final year in college and I was not going to Costa Rica. Probably not just for that reason. I probably just wasn't going to Costa Rica. I'm ginger and I don't know if it's the country for me.
And probably not.
So the provider that gave us poker was called Cake Poker. Again, bringing back all the really old names that are...
Yeah, I know them well.
Probably forgotten. Yeah, I know. So I worked for Cake Poker for a few years in very different roles there. I was supervisor to the help desk. I did a bit of B2B, a bit of B2C. I worked in fraud and I did all the quality control. And then obviously I left Cake. We won't go into that. And I knew it was time to do kind of something different. I'd been very operational. I'd kind of done fraud. I'd done customer service. I'd done all those things that you do on that side. I knew I wanted something different. And a small part of what I did was I had been kind of involved in the affiliates. I knew what they did and I really liked that side of it. So I was quite lucky, actually. Broadway Gaming gave me a job as an affiliate manager, and that's where I really got into the side of the industry that I love the most. I did a little bit of time there. I'm sure you guys know Rob and Simon, and they're absolutely great. I learned so much from them. They were fantastic. And then, Mr. Green came calling. I went there. And then I guess after a while, it wasn't even Mr. Green anymore. It was MRG. And now, who knows what it's going to be called with this William Hill news. WHMRG, something like that. I don't know.
I'm sure we could make up some kind of fantastic name for them. So, I know see Simon's been at Broadway Gaming now for 7 years, so he's done very well there. But I know all the companies you're talking about in the old days and where you started from, and it must have given you a great platform, you know, not just starting in the industry as an affiliate manager to be able to see, you know, all different sides of the iGaming business and how it all works, and that must have certainly certainly helped in your transition to becoming a super affiliate manager. And I do believe you are a super affiliate manager, even if I have coined that term. We're starting it. We must hashtag it. So I certainly know that you left Mr. Greens in great shape. Can you tell us a little bit about the decision behind the move?
Yeah, I mean, when I came to Mr. Green, it was, believe it or not, quite a different company. You know, and if you think about it, it was 2.5 years ago now. The affiliate industry was quite different then. So it was a much smaller team. I was the fourth person. They did things quite differently to me. And I learned loads from just being at Mr. Green, going from a smaller company like Broadway Gaming that dealt mainly in the UK market to going to this company that was had so many geos and so many different ways of doing things. So, you know, I really, really grew Mr. Green. I came in as the senior and I initially took on the UK markets. Then there was a time where I managed all of the markets apart from Scandi. That was not a fun time. That was a very tiring time. So, yeah, I did a lot of that. I implemented a lot of what I wanted to do. I think one of the main things that when I came to Mr. Green that I really wanted to make sure happened was that things got tighter and things got much more automated and numbers were there and they were ready. And when somebody came in new and they started, they had manuals and they had everything and they knew what to do. And I've got to that point and then I've kind of been looking around my team over the last 6 months to a year and I'm like, oh God, you guys don't really need me, do you? I'm here to wave and help, but this is working. So it felt like a natural time. And then also, I mean, Kasumo was a company that I have admired for years. Anybody who knows me will know I always talk about how much I think their brand is amazing. So when an opportunity came up there, a possibility, I thought, okay, yeah, maybe this is all falling into place at the right time.
Wow, that's super. So basically, you know, all the things that you implemented came to fruition with your team, and now everything is just running like a well-oiled machine. So congratulations on that.
I'm sure it is. They might not say that, but from my perspective, I thought it was.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. So being an affiliate manager, with alone a head of affiliates, can be very demanding as a role. So what advice would you give affiliate managers about about getting the balance right between doing a great job while having their time to recoup and to do the best job that they can possibly do?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I work with a lot of affiliate managers on both sides. And I think what most of them have in common is we all want to take care of people. You know, if you're an account manager, you've got that natural inclination towards, you know, talking to people and making sure they're happy and all of this. So with that said, I find a lot of affiliate managers, they don't take lunch. It's 9 p.m. and they're on their phone and they're answering Skype. And what I would say is it's okay not to answer your phone at 9 p.m. You know, we all live in different sides of the world. And people will understand if you don't get back to them till the next morning. If it's a really big emergency, they'll call and take your lunch. So these two things I realize are telling you not to work. But then everything else, I think, just comes down to planning. You know, the thing is, when you're an affiliate manager, you might have 1,000 accounts. You've set the things you want to do today. You've got 100 emails you didn't expect. Your Skype is going crazy. You have to plan your day. So, I mean, people might recoil at this, but I have 2 hours a day where I do Skype and the rest of the time I sign out of Skype. I do an hour in the morning and I do an hour in the afternoon. Because what happens is you're in the middle of an email or you're in the middle of doing a presentation and your Skype goes and then you're lost on a little track. So I section off each part of my day. I've got these hours for Skype, I've got these hours for emails, and I've got these hours for my projects. And then you'll probably get the impression from me that I like things in their box and organized as much as they can. But I prioritize everything. So I use a to-do list. There's loads of programs out there. I personally use Todoist. I find it great. You can rank things you can put things into project and you can rank them by importance. So basically the number one importance things has to do, the number two importance things can be done afterwards. That's basically how I plan my day. And then I try to go home by 6 o'clock.
Nice. Yeah. some great insight there. I mean, I think you're right. You know, it's vitally important to make sure you stop for those breaks, because if you get too wound down or too tied up, you really can't deliver the best service you can to your affiliates. Okay. So great advice. I guess another question for you around that affiliate manager role is, how would an affiliate manager transition into, say, a senior affiliate manager role or a head of affiliates? You know, what do they need to do to make that leap in their career? What attributes do they need to have, and what do they need to show higher management in order to obtain those goals?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's different in every company, but for me, it comes down to a few things. you've got to know your market and your numbers inside out. It's not just enough to say, oh, I know all the top affiliates in the UK. That's not enough. You need to know how each section of affiliates converts. You need to know what percentage is coming from sports, what percentage is coming from casino. You need to know everything. You need to have your Google alerts on. Anything that's happening in the industry, you need to know. And then another thing that I often say this to the guys that I work with who obviously want to get ahead. If you're in a bigger company, it can be harder to stand out as the senior. So you've got to find your niche. Everybody has something that they're probably better at than other people. And I mean, that can be really, really small. I mean, you could be the person who knows everything about cricket. I mean, go to any company. Who knows the most about cricket? Nobody knows anything about cricket. But that could be for you. You know, you could bring in the thing. You could bring in the cricket affiliates. You could bring in the campaigns that make cricket something for that company. And then the other thing I think you have to have is management skills. And I don't mean managing down. I mean managing around and up. Because to be the senior in your team, you're going to have to spend a lot of time with other departments. Possibly you're going to have to spend time with C levels and sometimes even the board. So you need to be able to handle yourselves in those situations. But a lot of that comes then from the confidence of knowing your market inside out and knowing what you know well. And then obviously, be nice. For God's sake, be nice. It goes so far.
I think that leads me into my next question, and I'm talking about, you know, affiliate managers are actually really account managers, and and do you think being personable helps? You know, I've been to so many conferences over the years and been approached by affiliate managers, having been a super affiliate, and just being asked, do you have traffic? And there's nothing more of a turnoff to an affiliate. And I think that, you know, that account management skill and being personable is something that you can't train. But my question to you is how important, and I think you probably already answered it, is do you think that is in the role of being an affiliate manager, being approachable, being able to talk on a human level?
Of course. Yeah. I mean, like you said there, when you're walking around the conferences, I often liken affiliates at these conferences sometimes to like the hot girl at the party, you know, every man wants to talk to her. But, you know, it's that one guy who says the right thing, who perhaps probably isn't the hottest, but maybe, you know, he's he knows what to say. He's seen this girl. He's seen she's interested in something, and maybe he brings up the conversation in relation to that. I think it's huge. I don't think it's completely it. I mean, we all know the guys who give the good talk, but they don't know their numbers. You need that balance. I think it absolutely starts with someone having that good logical way of thinking and being quite analytical, and then making sure that they have that little something in them that shows they can kind of shine and be nice to people and command a conversation. I just think that's the absolute cherry on the top. That's what the difference is between being okay and being good.
Yeah, perfect. And along that same lines, I mean, we're sort of talking customer service when you're an affiliate manager looking after your affiliates. So in respect to that, how many affiliates do you think an affiliate manager can sort of effectively manage?
You know, it really depends. I've been busy when I've only had 10 accounts, and I've been just as busy when I first started Mr. Green, for example. I think by the sixth month, I think I had 15 or 1600 accounts. I've been equally busy on both. It depends on the sort of clients that you have and how much you want to get from your affiliates. I mean, let's say if the senior on the team, maybe 10 to 20 accounts is okay for them because they're handling your big, big guys. But if you want to make a real difference and maybe optimize the smaller guys who need more time, then I think the less you can have, the better. In many ways. I know that's not always possible, but what I think happens is, particularly in big companies, they might have thousands of affiliates signed up, and those smaller guys can easily get forgotten about, which is totally understandable. I mean, everybody's got to make money, but I think we all have examples of the smaller guys that we worked with from the start. Now they're big guys, and we've done that together, basically. So I think it's very dependent on what you want to achieve. For me, I think realistically, I could handle a few hundred smaller guys and maybe 5 to 6 really big guys. That would be kind of, I would feel happy that I would still get something and help someone grow while still growing something that's already big.
Definitely. I mean, that sounds quite reasonable, doesn't it? And I mean, as you say, you really can't judge a book by its cover either. I mean, young guys or other guys getting into the industry, you don't know what their background is and where they've come from. And some people just have that Midas touch once they hit our industry and can send huge numbers of players very quickly. So you really want to show that love to everyone. Don't mistreat someone just because they're new to the industry. So yeah,
absolutely.
Very good point there. Yeah. And what do you see as being the typical day for you in your role as a head of affiliates? Run us through what that looks like, Laura.
Oh, crap. There is no typical day. the only bit of order I would say is I get in by 8 a.m., maybe half 7 if I can, have some breakfast, try catch up on emails. In Mr. Green, what we do is 9 a.m. every morning, all the department heads, we have a meeting, which is quite cool. And we all just say, look, this is what's been happening. This is what might affect you. So you kind of start your day with a good overarching view of what's going on. So once I get out of that meeting, I usually chat to my team, make sure everybody's okay, see if they've got any problems. And then, like I say, there is no typical day. You know, I'll always be doing slides for something, whether that's presenting to the board or maybe I'm putting together a business case so that I can have more money, maybe so that we can do more for our affiliates and things like that. Lots of meetings. And that's something that I've learned. When I first took on the role of head of affiliates at Mr. Green, I found that every day I had 7 hours booked of meetings and I had no time to actually do my job. So now I quite sneakily, and I will continue doing this into my new role, I book off about 4 hours every day. So for all anybody knows who they look at my calendar is that I'm in a meeting where I can actually work.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a thing, death by meeting sometimes. They're productive but counterproductive at the same times. And sometimes you just need to get your head stuck down to your computer and get things done. So, yeah.
They can, and it can be so cultural, I find, as well. I mean, I come from companies where I used to work with mainly British and Irish and American people. And, you know, we come into a meeting where, you know, here's the agenda, bish, bash, 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 bash. And maybe that's 20 minutes. But working for a more Swedish company, they love to chat and like hash things out. And like they're perhaps more entrepreneurial as a people. You know, they're like, oh, this leads me onto this idea. And I'm like, that's great. Can we get back to this number here, please?
Fantastic. Yes, I remember sitting on a panel once at a conference years ago, and a series of questions were asked by one particular person, and the whole panel, whole line of people on the panel never answered the question after about 20 minutes, and my response was, no, that's incorrect. So I know exactly what you're talking about. Sometimes you just got to get to the point.
Sometimes
it's handy. Hey, regarding the training of affiliate managers, do you think as an industry we're actually doing enough, and are there enough resources out there to train affiliate managers well, or do you really see it being an internal role to train from the top down?
I don't think we have enough training. I mean, there's no course that you can go on to be an affiliate manager. And you really need, obviously you need your people skills, but I think you also need a certain level of maths. I'm not saying you need a high level of mathematics. You just need a certain analytical brain. While I agree with you, internal promotions can often be the best thing, because you can see in someone, let's say they work in customer service or maybe they work in payments team, you can see, okay, these guys have proven themselves very, very good at like noticing trends, and they're obviously very reliable. We know they're never, you know, calling in sick, and they've got a really good attitude. I mean, that can be great. And I mean, some of the best people I've worked at, they've been promoted from inside. And obviously I started in customer service, most of us did. But I do think you run a risk then, because you can end up in a company that has no outside knowledge than what the company does. So if I work on a team and I have 10 people under me and I'm taking all of them from customer service, they only know what I know. And who's to say what I know is currently correct? I think you need that mix of everything from outside. So if you can bring from outside, that's great. And in regards to training, I think things are getting better though. I mean, I know like Tom Galanis and people like that are doing courses. I think we should take up on them a lot more. I think we've a lot to learn from each other. But I think also key, what we should learn is, and something I follow quite closely is, I mean, affiliate marketing isn't just gaming, it's the rest of the world. And lots of industries are doing a lot more than us and a lot differently. So, I mean, for me, I'm really, really interested in the cosmetics industry, and watching the way affiliate marketing is there is so different to us. I find that really, really interesting. I would love to see people from other, in like maybe beauty industries, come in to gaming. I know we've gotten some people from adult recently and stuff, but I'd love to see other industries just start to infect us a bit. I think we learn a lot.
Oh, definitely. I can't say that I'm into makeup myself, Laura, but, you know, I do understand what you're talking about in that diversification. Recently, myself, I've been talking to people in the trading space, Forex, that kind of thing. And it's very interesting to see what they're doing and their techniques and some of the challenges that the affiliate managers are having in that space as well, in terms of compliance, is very interesting as well. So I think bringing in that outside knowledge sometimes does help. I also believe Leanne Johnson runs a course with Affiliate Insider to help train affiliate managers. And she, I believe, runs bespoke courses based on the particular company you are and what your needs are and how to train your affiliate managers to be more effective. So there are, I think it's growing, but it's a little bit hidden at the moment. But I'm sure that'll come to light as time goes by.
Yeah, for sure.
Speaking of being trained, what do you think the hardest part of a role is as an affiliate manager, and what do you think can be done to overcome this?
For me, I know we touched on already. It's fitting everything in. You know, you've got to, as I said, you've got to prioritize. The number one priority is, okay, what can get us fined? And then it goes from there, obviously. So for me, that's the hardest part. Now, I think I see a trend where that's changing. I mean, maybe in 5 years, I could be wrong. I don't think we're all going to have the thousands of accounts. You know, we see this trend of everything being bought up and stuff. And then also, we're becoming more automated. Everything is becoming more automated. When I first became an affiliate manager, I would come in every day. I would run 10 Excel spreadsheets, and I'd VLOOK up between them all to get my numbers, and I would lose an hour and a half of my day just manually running stuff. Now, I think very few of us have that. Now we've got automated stuff. Everything is there. It's ready for us. So I think that's going to keep continuing, and long may it continue. And then obviously, without name dropping, we're getting all of these programs like Vagged.io and stuff, where we can see straight away, oh, okay, this needs to be updated on this affiliate's website because that's an out-of-date offer, things like that. So I think these tools are going to make it a little bit easier. But then there'll be new problems. Of course there will.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, with expansion into other markets and cross-border promotions, etc., I mean, I think the role is ever growing and expanding. You know, not that long ago, the affiliate manager's role was pretty much account management, obviously needing to know the numbers and recruiting new affiliates. But now we have this compliance issue where, you know, it's a new facet of the role. So there is a lot of demands on an affiliate manager just to be on top of everything. And technology is really the only way that we're going to keep on top of it. So and thanks for the plug for wag.io. Thanks. I mean, we touched on this briefly before about other industries and what they're doing. What do you see is happening with affiliates at the moment? Is there anything strong that you're seeing stand out in the way that affiliates are sending traffic now, whether it be social, PPC, search, offline? Any insights you can share here, or is it Twitch? What's happening out there?
Yeah, I mean, I think Twitch is the most exciting new thing. Not that it's that new anymore. It's growing, and it started as something so, so small. But again, I think now that we're seeing the other industries coming into this, I think Twitch is only going to grow bigger, and even YouTube streaming. So, for example, like if you go on YouTube, I don't know if you know someone like Jenna Marbles. She's one of the biggest YouTubers. She's hilarious. This girl has millions of views. Every video she puts up within a few hours, there's millions of views on it. She's on Twitch now, and I'm loving seeing things like that. I'm loving seeing the affiliates are noticing that everybody's on Twitch. Personally, I don't get it why you would go to watch someone playing slots, but hey, that's not for me. It's not my generation. I think the affiliates who are getting in on this, I think they've got the right idea. And there's some people doing some cool stuff, like Katina Media. Actually, they are running this promo called Slots Fighter, where basically it's a Twitch tournament, and I think things like that are going to really start growing. So for me, that's one of the more interesting things happening right now. The other, like, there's lots of interesting things, don't get me wrong, but I feel like they've all come from something else. You know, everybody's increasing their automation, stuff like that, but that's all just been growing gradually.
For sure. I know a lot of the big companies around the world, the Fortune 500 companies, actually look to what 11, 12, 13-year-olds are doing now, and they start already promoting their brand to them that young. I know for a fact my boys are 13 and 11, and, you know, they spend a lot of their time actually watching people play games, you know, play Minecraft or whatever it is. And I don't get it, but obviously there's something there. And, you know, these Fortune 500 companies have got onto this, and they're starting to promote through these avenues too. So it's interesting times ahead. So talking about tricky things that affiliates do, because some of them can be tricky little buggers, have you seen anything in terms of fraudulent activity or something that might be a little bit unscrupulous or not exactly above board? And can you give me an example of what you've seen, something that you saw which wasn't just right?
Oh, of course. You see it every month, of course. I mean, no matter what you put in, there'll always be somebody who tries to get around it. I mean, I've seen all the standard things that people see, you know, the clever guys who get a CPA, everything looks fine, there's no patterns, everybody's depositing different amounts, and then they wait 5 months and all those deposits are charged back. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of a standard one. But and I think something that I'm noticing a bigger trend in now, I mean, obviously since Mr. Green took on Sportsbook, I've been more exposed to it, is arbing. I mean, arbing is getting much more sophisticated as I can see it, particularly now as I noticed that so many brands are using maybe the same sports software. So if you take something like Kambi, so many different providers are using Kambi. They can have rings of arbers of numerous people doing it over numerous sites, which is so much harder to spot. But yeah, I'm sure we're going to get more on top of that. And we have been. But one thing that I always find hilarious is just the laziness of some people who defraud. Like, they don't even try. Like, I've had I've seen multiple cases like this, but I remember one case in particular. This guy, he was on a CPA deal, and to his credit, he knew to start off on a rev share deal and send a few kind of decent players so that it would look like he'd be okay, you know. So he starts sending loads of traffic when he gets this CPA deal, all great. And then I'm looking and they all have basically the same username, like Laura21, Laura25, and like emails the exact same thing, Laura21@hotmail.com. And then they're all depositing and wagering on the exact same game, all exactly 20 quid. At least try, man. That's never worked, surely. You go to that effort of getting all those robbed credit cards or whatever you did. And I mean, they're great.
Yeah, it's a bit like robbing bank maybe and forgetting to put your face mask on pretty much. So
exactly. Well, I mean, we joke about it, but I mean, with the AML laws, I mean, we have to be serious about this. We could end up in jail at the end of the day. We have to be on top of these guys, you know.
Definitely. And it's been an issue for such a long time. But, you know, all you can do is be diligent, have your systems in place to check this fraudulent activity. And, you know, obviously it's about creating that trust with your affiliates and knowing who they are before, you know, maybe paying out. You know, there's no harm in holding back a payment if you're not sure about something, because at the end of the day, as you say, you've got to protect yourself and your brand and the company. So, yeah.
I mean, of course, and at Mr. Green, we have a very enthusiastic fraud team, you know, and they'll often message you and they'll be like, oh, this affiliate has sent 3 players that charge back. And I'll look and I'm like, yeah, but they've sent 20,000 players. It's okay. Don't worry.
Don't panic. Don't panic. It's okay.
Those players just charge back. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It does happen. Yeah. I guess looking at the industry as a whole, are there any sort of brands who run their affiliate programs that you really respect and you see them as being standing out from the rest of the crowd?
Yeah, I mean, there's different facets, I think, from different companies. I really like what Leo Vegas have done with their affiliate program. I think there's no surprise they've been winning awards all over the place, because they've taken what I think is a really, really good way of doing it. They've taken their site as like a learning portal. So I'm not sure if you've ever been on the site, but they've got a blog where they teach you like SEO tips and tricks, you know, the best way for optimizing and all of these things, and there's always lots of learning information there. So I really like what they've done with that. I think it's really, really good. I think as well, obviously, I think Kasumo's program is really, really good. But I think what a lot of theirs comes down to is they have a solid team of people who are there years and who know what they're doing. And I think that's where you see that can be a big changer, I think, with what the best affiliate programs are, is having consistency. And it's something that we have in Malta as a big problem, because Malta just doesn't have enough pool of people to work. So people move all the time. So I think what brings a lot of programs down is consistency. You develop a rapport with your affiliate manager, and then they've left. They've gone to a competitor or somewhere else. And you guys knew what you did best together. And I think that can be an issue. So I think the guys who can be consistent, the affiliate programs like Casumo or even Broadway Gaming, to go back to them, where you know who you're speaking to and you're always speaking to the same people, I think that makes them stand out, which in a way is quite sad to say that just people being there makes them stand out. It is, but I think it's kind of it shows what's going on in the affiliate management industry. There's so much movement.
Yeah, for sure. It is amazing, the churn rate. And I don't have any statistics on it, but you've only got to keep an eye on the boards and, be signed up to a number of affiliate programs to see how often affiliate managers change. And I wonder whether or not in some cases that's a little bit of frustration because they can't instigate change with inside the organization, or they can't meet their KPIs because they're not given the right tools. But yeah, there is definitely a big churn in terms of affiliate managers moving from firm to firm. So an interesting point there. On the flip side to that last question, do you see any affiliates at the moment that are standing out for you? I mean, any great work? Are they pushing the bounds of technology, innovation? What have you seen recently, Laura?
This is going to sound like a bit of a cop-out answer, but to be honest, the ones that are standing out to me are the ones that have stood out to me for the longest time. Like Ask Gamblers, they're for the players. It's interactive. I really like what they do. And similarly, the latest Casino Bonuses group, I've always really admired what they do. I mean, it's old school, it's forums, it's players chatting. But along with this, they go hand in hand with also making sure the players are okay. And I think that's the affiliates that are involved with the players. I think they're going to continue to grow as regulation gets tighter and tighter. I think those affiliates that make sure they are on top of it, and they've plastered around, and maybe in some way that they also really truly believe in player protection too. Those affiliates really, really stand out for me. And there are a few scattered around for sure.
No, some very great points there. I mean, that's the thing. If you can build a community as an affiliate and, get people coming back time and time again and then transitioning them off to brands that are very well trusted, you build trust with those players over a long period of time. And it's very beneficial to the brand and to the affiliate to do that. So, that's some great insight there. So obviously with a lot of these affiliate businesses of late, there's been continued acquisitions. Do you think this trend is set to continue, and do you think it's a good thing or a bad thing for the sector?
Yeah, it's definitely set to continue. Someone made a joke to me at a conference a little while ago, and I can't remember who it was. And they said, look, let's just face it, we're all just sitting here waiting for Katina to buy us, which I thought was very, very funny. I do think it's going to continue to grow, but I still think there's plenty of space for the smaller guys who've got cool ideas and who are trying to just build it up. But I do think that space is going to become smaller. Whether it's a good or a bad thing, I don't know what it is, but it is what it is. I mean, I think it's also a sign of our industry maybe growing up a bit. So those small guys, you've been to those conferences many, many years ago where it's kind of just all about the drinking and mining, everybody's being brought out, got drunk, and that's how business was done. I think that would be the big change.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I hope we still have that element of fun for many years to come, but I think that will change slightly. Business will be less done at the bar, which is good and bad.
Good and bad, yes, I agree.
I like a bar.
I think my personal take on it is I think it's both good and bad. I think one of the hard things for a larger company who is running an affiliate business is to keep on top of everything all the time. And, systems can sometimes only go so far. And I think that the smaller guys can, make inroads around the fringes and then start to grow their brand and get bigger over time. It's not easy, but it's not easy at being big. It's not easy being small, but sometimes you can just pick off little things and apply them by a factor of 10, and all of a sudden you're ending up sending 1,000 players. So I think there's pros and cons, but it has definitely changed, that's for sure.
That's a really, really good point, and you've reminded me of something. A little while back when the GDPR came in, NetRefer made a mass update to their security settings. They had to for that reason. And it meant that everybody needed to change their passport. The password, which absolutely was fine for the little guys who just had one account with 15 operators. But the big guys, like our XL Medias, our Katinas, they have hundreds of accounts with hundreds of operators. And like you say, they were just floored by this. This was a huge thing for them to have to take care of.
Yeah, bigger is not always better, apparently.
Absolutely,
just something to keep in mind there. Don't get too big. No. Go out, get big. Get big, everyone. I guess in terms of an affiliate picking a brand to work with, I mean, what do you think that would be the main factors there? I mean, are they looking for the brand? Is it the offer, the software, other factors? You know, what would you be looking for as an affiliate to ensure that you're going to maximize your dollar for your traffic?
I mean, I think it's a bit of everything that you've said. The brand and their reputation is obviously really, really important because, I mean, how many affiliates have been stung? Almost all affiliates have been stung by late payments or not getting paid or something happening. So knowing that they're a brand and they pay within a certain amount of time and they have a good reputation is probably going to be one of the first things that attracts you to it. But in saying that, that's not what's going to keep you with it. You know, you could find that the big brands in certain markets just aren't converting with you. Of course, maybe they're at saturation point for your traffic. Then you go to the smaller guys and you find that they've got the better converting landing pages because maybe they've got the time and, as you say, the quickness because they're not so big to just change things and very quickly A/B test and get things straight out there. So I think it can be a mix of things. But I mean, I also don't think we should discount the affiliate manager in it either. Nobody wants to work with an asshole. And you know, when
definitely
you trust someone, you perhaps follow them to another company if they go to it, or you know, if you know that no matter what happens, they're going to go to bat for you and make sure that you get what you need.
I think that's a
huge part of it.
Definitely all those factors for sure. And Laura, have you ever considered becoming an affiliate yourself? And if so, what would you be getting into? Would it be makeup or what would it be?
Yeah, I think not gaming. I mean, I've been in gaming for 13 years. I've never considered being an affiliate, if I'm being honest. I don't know how I would fit it in. And like I say, because I've done it for 13 years, it's all the news I read. You know, I mean, Facebook and everything else knows me so well that they're the only advertisements I get. It's the only news I get is about gaming. So, yeah, maybe if I was ever to do something in affiliates, it probably wouldn't be in gaming. But okay. I don't think it would be for a long time. I don't think I could
get
it in.
No, too busy. Too busy in the garden, as you say. So I guess the other questions I've got here for you, in regards to compliance, obviously, it's been a major game changer in the industry in recent years. Do you think brands and affiliates are doing enough in the industry at the moment? Are we heading in the right direction? You know, what's your take on compliance at the moment?
I mean, I feel like it's a mixture between war and chaos, if I'm being honest. I mean, operators are terrified. Affiliates are trying, but they don't necessarily have the lawyers that the operators have to know that what they're trying is absolutely 100% correct. And I think that's been the main issue, is that the regulations and the guidelines have come out, but I think none of us feel like they're super clear. They're so subject to interpretation. They're like, oh, but, you know, I'll say to one lawyer, do you think this game would be okay? Could that be seen as appealing to children or vulnerable people? Mm. And he might say, yeah, that's fine. There's nothing appealing to children to that. And then I'd say to another lawyer, they would say, oh, well, there's bright yellow in it and bright colours appeal to children. And I think we're all just trying our best, but at the same time to not stop our business. I think what's really needed, while we're all trying, I think we just need someone to come along as an in-between and give us X, Y, Z, and everybody needs to do these exact things. I think we would all just like breathe a sigh of relief, because the thing is, affiliates are trying. I mean, there'll always be a bad egg who won't and deliberately tries to get around it, but that's a very, very small section of people. But the operators are so scared, and it's understandable because it's a funny law. Or they're funny laws. I understand why the operators are scared, because they are going to get the fine.
Yeah, I mean,
it's the weirdest thing. I think everybody would feel better if everybody had maybe, I don't know, some level of culpability for it. So the affiliates feel like, right, I'm trying because I have to. Obviously, I want to keep working with this operator. But I think some affiliates also feel terrified that, okay, I've done all I can. At any minute, they can shut down this program and say, no, I'm not, and it's because of some clients.
Yeah.
It's I get the laws, but I think we need laws for the laws.
Yeah, yeah,
to exactly. To protect both sides.
Yeah, some very good points there. I mean, really, it is a little bit ambiguous in some of the in some of the laws, and I think we need some clarifications on that. Mm-hmm. I mean, fines are pretty final, so we want to be obviously well ahead of that. So, but interesting. What do you do with an affiliate who's non-responsive and refuses to take down their banners? Because I mean, I've seen a lot of affiliates, you know, just leave up a brand's banners and promotions, but they just redirect the traffic somewhere else if they've been booted out of the affiliate program. But I mean, really, that's still the responsibility of the brand to have that affiliate take down that ad.
Exactly. That's a really, really difficult one. So I mean, if you've shut down that affiliate because after multiple tries they're still maybe promoting a misleading offer, at that point you've cut them down, and in theory you would have removed that banner or made it go to something else. That would be my thing. I would just change that to maybe a logo or something if I could in the net referrer or income access backend, whatever you have. It's not always possible though. They might just save that as a JPEG. For me, I mean, this isn't going to cover everything. Unfortunately, I would withhold their commissions until that could be sorted. But we may be at a point where they're not due any more commissions and they're just doing it. I mean, luckily, I know a lot of affiliates, like face to face. I've met a lot of them, and I don't think any affiliate I've ever met would never, out of malice, just leave up your banner to fuck you off. You know what I mean?
No, I know exactly what you're saying. In most cases, it's the fact they're promoting 500, 1,000 brands, exactly, and they haven't got time to get to it. So, I fully agree there.
So for me, it's a call if I can. Please, man. Yeah.
Please. Yeah, you don't want to get to that stage where you're sending desist letters, because that's just, you know, it's no good for anybody, and just costs everybody. So Laura, is there something you believe in that almost nobody else agrees with you about, and this doesn't have to be gambling related at all?
Well, I don't know if nobody else agrees with me about it, but nobody has said that they agree with me on this. I don't believe in averages. No, I believe they exist, averages, but I think as an industry, all we talk about is averages, and that's not looking at the whole picture. You know, I go into a meeting and someone will say, the average deposit was this, the average wager was this. Nobody looks at the standard deviation, the median. Nobody cares that one guy swung this hugely. And I talk about that a lot, and then people just kind of roll over and say, oh, Laura's going off on a maths thing again. But honestly, we need to stop relying on averages so much. There's other ways of looking at things.
That's some really good points there, and I'm sure some of the mathematicians inside the company look at you a bit sideways and go, well, this is the way we do it. But it makes perfect sense to me, that's for sure. If you could change one thing inside the iGaming industry as a whole, how would that look, and why do you think that change would be needed?
I think how we're perceived by the outside. I mean, sometimes you look at these articles being on The Guardian or somewhere else, and it just looks like it's all strippers and taking people's money, or you know, then the older people perhaps just think it's old men who go to the bookies with, or the tab or something, with like a tiny pencil, and they just place their horse bets. And we know that's not what it is. Like, it's a really growing industry where we do care about the players, where, let's face it, me and you are perhaps the key demographic. People who will just throw in a few quid maybe every month and see what's going on. So I think that's what I would like to change, is how the outside perceives us. I think it's getting better, I think, with regulation, and I think it's becoming more, perhaps, I don't want to say normalized, that's the wrong word, but people are getting, oh yeah, you placed a bet on that match, cool, rather than, oh, he placed a bet, because
we know
that's
sure.
not how it is for most people who play.
No, exactly. Hey, and a few quick fire questions to finish off, Laura. Do you gamble yourself? And if so, on what? You slightly alluded to that there a second ago. So what is it? What is your flavour?
Slots. I like slots. Maybe once a month I'm going to pour myself a glass of wine, put 50 quid in somewhere and see what's new on slots. And then once a year, Eurovision.
Mm-hmm.
Of course.
Excellent.
That's great.
I'll be sending you through a tracking link at the end of this discussion, Laura, and feel free to drop that 50 quid. Most admired brand in the industry?
Kasumo. And I really, really mean that. I think they were the first to really get gamified. I love their product. I think they're really cool. I love their ethos too. Cool.
Excellent. And this is a tough one. Favorite industry person. I mean, you've got to be honest answering this question. You don't really have to answer this question at all, but I'd be interested to know.
There's lots of people I really, really admire, actually. But I'm going to have to say this because I'll be hit if I don't. I have to say my boyfriend. Because he's been in the industry 13 years, like me. Obviously, I like him because he takes care of my dog and sometimes he remembers to bring the bins out. But he is the smartest person I know when it comes to numbers and sports. I remember years and years ago when I used to be a supervisor on a team and it was all sports questions we would get, and someone would ask me something really, really like odd, you know, something about curling or something. I'd be like, yeah, I'll find out. I'd be straight onto the phone to Peter going, Peter, what's a wicket?
Nice.
But yeah, he's obviously my favorite. But there's other great people. I mean, someone else, again, a little bit of bias here. Shout out to my friend, Lauren Monaghan. I don't know if you know her. She is a head of responsible gaming in Kisumu. She was previously in Mr. Green and Paddy Power. And she is a real person who has that great link between having business acumen and also being for the players. She really, really cares about the players. But at the same time, when Cheltenham comes around, she'll be the person who, you know, places a few quid on it. She gets it. And I think how she speaks to the players and how she represents players wherever she goes, I think she's one to watch.
Great. Love it. Hey, other than wicket, what's your favourite word?
Oh, God. Grand, but not in the real definition of the word, like the way the Irish use grand. So it can mean anything, you know. You could say, oh, that's a grand dog now. And what you mean is, I love this dog. He's made my life. Or you could say really passive aggressively, yeah, that's grand. Or something that's gotten me in trouble before, working in multicultural companies. You know, I remember once being in a meeting. And, you know, there was an issue, you know, we were trying to fix it and we were in there for an hour and a half and, you know, the sky was falling with all these people. And I did that real Irish thing where I said, ah, sure, it'll be grand. And what you actually mean as an Irish person is, don't worry about it, like, it'll be fine.
It'll be fine.
Yeah, exactly. But what they thought was, oh, what's your plan? Will it be? It's a great word. It can work for multiple things.
Love it. Absolutely love it. And your favourite curse word?
Oh, God, fuck. I mean, again, works for multiple things. It can be a verb. It can be anything.
Yeah, I love the way that you say that because with your accent, it really accentuates it. So that's a new way. I'll have to learn how to say fuck that way.
Fuck.
Excellent. Laura, thank you so much for your time today. A great deal of insight here, and I'm sure affiliates and affiliate managers and other participants in the industry are going to get a great deal out of listening to you tell us your insights today. You've been a great addition to the show. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Ray. This was fun.
Excellent.
Take care.